Hey everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, coming to you live from Trump's America, and coming to us from Trump's England is Dom. Dom, how are you?
How do I even ask that question? I guess I'm trying to find solace in things and people that I enjoy. Don't know how good a strategy that is, but that's basically all we have at this point.
Yeah, we won't talk too much about the election today. We will talk about it soon, and more on that in a second. But how is, just quickly, is England reacting at all? Are they feeling like the sky is falling, or what's the scoop over there?
Yeah, it's more like a sense of shell shock that it actually happened, because I think there were lots of people who were just like aghast that Trump was even in contention for becoming president. And now the fact that it's actually happened is just like hard to even process.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk more about that. We won't do that on the Survivor podcast. We will, though, do that. A lot of people tweeted at us wondering if we were going to continue our election coverage now that we've gotten this genius caliber twist ending. And that is something we're going to be doing. We're actually going to be doing that. By the time that you guys hear this podcast, we'll have already recorded our post-election breakdown podcast. And joining us for that are going to be Scott Green and Michael Botta, actually fellow Genius fans and hosts of Genius Cast, which for other Genius fans out there, if you haven't checked that out, those two are great on there. Very excited to talk with both of them. They both certainly have a lot more knowledge on just general politics in the country and how things work that the way that smart people would be able to talk about it that can hang with you, Dom. I know that I tend to be you guys with all of your degrees. I'm hoping I can just keep up, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, Michael is, I believe, has a PhD, went to Harvard, and then Scott is a lawyer, has a political science degree like I do, and you are loud and have opinions, so we all have a role to play. And
that's how you win in the presidency, apparently. Right. I'm the Donald Trump figure of this discussion. I'm excited for that. And also coming very soon, I know Stephen Fishback is temporarily on like a couple weeks hiatus from podcasting. However, podcast listeners do not need to always be on a hiatus from Stephen, because Dom, you've wanted to do a podcast that I'll let you kind of set up more, that Stephen has been a part of.
Yeah, so inspired by the kind of annual horror that we feel about how rabid the Big Brother fan base is, I decided to do a kind of deep dive, if you like, into like the nature of fan interaction with reality TV contestants. So I basically put together this show where we have an academic's take on that, and then also a personal take on that from Stephen, who is qualified not only because he's a tremendous podcaster and just really just the best person to ever grace the planet Earth, but also a two-time reality TV contestant, has been around the industry for a long time, so he had some great stuff to say about that too.
Yeah, I think particularly with Stephen, and this is something we got into with him, we've already recorded that, and that should be coming soon, is he was someone who was in a pretty unusual position of getting to play Survivor both right before Twitter really emerged and then also after Twitter was a thing. And he was a very famous established person on Twitter. So that was really, you know, to get someone's opinion on just the vast, vast differences between the two as far as fan interaction was a lot of fun. And as I said, that should be coming to you very soon. But Dom, do you have anything else before we get into what we are primarily here to talk about today, which is this merge that just went down on Survivor Millennials versus Gen X?
No, let's do it.
Well, actually, one thing that we should probably know is that, yeah, of course, today is actually 5 years ago, basically right now. I posted it in the evening. Our first ever podcast went up, and we were talking about the Survivor 23 merge. Here we are, 5 years to almost the hour, talking about the Survivor 33 merge. It is crazy that we've talked about not only every merge in between, but essentially every episode in between. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we could have done it on the exact five-year anniversary, but we were too lazy to do that, and of course we were, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, exactly.
But as we said last week, thank you for everyone who has been tuning in for whatever portion of that time you've been tuning in for. It's still fun after all this time. It's been great to get to talk to all of you, and it's just been, you know, I hope that this continues for a very long time.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, I feel like if we harp too much on it being 5 years, it's almost like resigning ourselves to it not continuing for that much longer. But I think it seems like Survivor's at no point going to be slowing down anytime soon, at least. And I don't think either are we. So, Dom, let's get into this merge. We get back from Michaela's shocking and devastating blindside last week. We are, of course, going to start with the fallout from that. And Hannah was the odd person out at that vote. And she says, "I would have voted with you if you'd told me." And then we get in a confessional from her. her, being excluded from the vote is a surefire way to break trust and create enemies, and later on say, I hope I can get my revenge, I'm ready to play, really setting up a really fun dynamic entering this merge, if it seems like a lot of people are going to be open to a lot of different possibilities.
Yeah, it feels like this season is one long study in how people react differently when they get blindsided. And so, like, we saw Hannah on the other side of that coin before, and, like, she was the one who was screwing over people, and we saw Zeke, like, and Adam have to process that. And now that boot's kind of on the other foot. And we saw, like, Adam have to deal with that in his own way when he blindsided Figgy, and, like, Taylor is still out for revenge despite Adam's best efforts. So this is, like, a running theme of the season. It's going to be fun to see how that develops, especially as it pertains to things like the legacy advantage and jury votes and so on.
Yeah. Is it crazy of me, and maybe I'm just misremembering how this went down, but it feels like Taylor actually might have done one of the better jobs of handling being blindsided. Didn't he kind of go back and try to fit back in and be like, oh, it's okay? Or was he freaking out? Have I already forgotten it to that extent?
Well, he is a chill bro, so he didn't really wear on his sleeve that much, but you could tell that he was angry, and he was angry specifically at Adam, and that has endured, at least until now, and probably for quite some time to come.
Okay, I don't know why I was randomly so set on giving Taylor undue credit. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, well, when the preview for next episode, two episodes later, is, I'm still mad, I want to get revenge on Adam, I will bathe in Adam's blood, like, you can surmise that maybe he didn't take it all that well.
No, but I mean, at least I was thinking, at least for some reason, that he at least put on the happy face for Ken David and, or for Ken Jess and Adam. But apparently that was not the case.
Sure, but like, what does he have to be mad about for Ken and Jess, right? I mean, what are they going to do? Vote for each other? Vote one of themselves out? The person who is at fault here is Adam. And so you can understand all of that anger being channeled towards him, whereas Ken and Jess seem to be pretty inoffensive regardless, and also didn't have any part to play in this betrayal, as he sees it.
Yeah, all right. Well, certainly plenty on Adam this week. He was certainly, I would say, the star of this merge episode. And he was right away there were four people who got confessionals about just, oh, it's merge time. You know, we see him every season. Oh, hey, it's the merge. I'm so excited. That means this and this for my game. And the people who got those confessionals were, as Adam as mentioned, Zeke got one, Michelle got one, the eventual merge boot, and Brett got one. And this was actually the start of a pretty visible episode for Brett that passed me by upon initial viewing, but when I was rewatching this earlier today, Brett actually had a pretty big episode here.
I wonder if that's why he was so hard on us last week, like knowing that he was about to be the star of the show. He wanted to get his profile up, but it didn't even amount to anything, right? Because we had the scene, as you mentioned, at the very start of the episode, and then later on he catches Taylor when he's sneaking away with the food. But beyond that, like, it wasn't like everyone was angling for his vote, or he had some big decision to make, or he did something that had some amazing consequences. It was just like he was there, and I guess they needed to give airtime to somebody, so there he was.
Well, it's not just that they needed to give airtime to someone. The scene you mentioned of him kind of air quotes catching Taylor, even though he doesn't really do anything about it, he just says, oh, you know, he gets a confessional saying, yeah, I woke up and Taylor was taking all the food, but I just decided not to deal with it and just go back to sleep. That is something that I could not fathom why they left that in, other than to make Adam potentially just look like his reaction was worse by comparison. But more than that, Brett got another confessional at the merge feast that easily could have gone to anyone. And it really looked like the whole Gen X coming back together was really shown. At least, you know, Zeke obviously played a tremendous role in that, and David got a lot of screen time. But at least from what I could tell, the strategy angle that they were presenting to me seemed to be like Chris and Brett were the ones kind of pulling that together.
Yeah, even though Brett, as we said, despite this, wasn't that visible. And Chris, we expected to be one of the big players here, but he didn't seem like he was there either. I've been wondering about this too, because I don't know if it's just like Chris's manner, where he's not loud, he's not always boasting to the camera about how great he is or how everything's going his way or how he's going to blindside all of these people. He's just kind of there getting down to business, right? So I don't know if it's just his general affect, which is making me think this, but it seems like he's just not there at all for someone who we can imagine is going to play a pretty big role at some point.
I mean, I know he got at least one confessional and some solid screen time as far as when he and Brett, they were the first people shown, I think, at the merge, kind of re-buddying up and like locking back in. Okay, this, you know, it was Brett who got the confessional at that point saying, I thought there was a chance that I could potentially work with Jay, except he seems to be totally back in love with Taylor. So that's off the table. I'm going to lock things back in with Chris. And then they just start pulling in other Gen Xers and Adam and Zeke.
Yeah, to me, and this is jumping ahead a bit, but I think this informs all of our takes about this episode. This felt to me like the actual series of events out there was very obvious. Like, it was just this big group banding together, and there was always going to be those millennials on the outs.
Right.
And so they needed a way to make it more interesting, and they settled on this somewhat contrived Adam storyline. And I'm certainly willing to buy that maybe Adam, in his enthusiasm or maybe his paranoia, overplayed his hand a bit, got scared, and kind of wound everyone up the wrong way. But at the same time, it's just like, it felt, and this is a constant criticism that we've made of the season, right? There just doesn't seem to be that much dramatic tension, even when the events themselves, like we had like 5 or 6 blindsides or whatever by this point, even when the events themselves are interesting.
Well, I think further your point, I think the fact that Adam sat on his idol and did not appear, I feel like Adam is the type who, if he thought there was even a slightly realistic chance that he would leave, especially when he, I think, knew probably that a lot of votes would potentially be coming at him from millennials, he would have just played that idol and locked in his safety and almost ensured that his side won the vote. But to quickly go back to something, are you saying that Chris is like low energy Jeb of the season? Are you accusing Chris of being that like camera unfriendly? Because I feel like Chris is actually, like, I think Chris is, he's obviously not the most animated guy on the season, but I do get why they at least put him on there. I think it is fun having, and I would put Brett in the same category. I don't think they're the loud, kind of over-the-top characters or the really compelling speakers and narrators, but I think they are kind of just fun presences to have out there.
Yeah, I think the way the season is going at the moment, the focus is on the millennials because they're the ones who... it's kind of up in the air which way they're going to go, and also they're the most dynamic characters from a TV standpoint, so everyone else kind of gets lost in the shuffle a bit. So for Chris, maybe this is going to amount to something, maybe he just gets booted at some point and there's not much to it, but if I'm a producer and I'm taking a very like cold-hearted look at things, I would say, well, Zeke is like this vibrant, engaging personality and also one of the ringleaders, it seems, and Chris maybe is also one of the ringleaders but is just Chris, right? Like, he's just doing his thing. So why would I give that time to him when I could divvy it up elsewhere?
Well, what do you think it means? Because to me, at least, the two most likely outcomes are, one, Chris is leaving sometime soon, and this is a potential visibility spike. Like, Chris and Brett, sudden, for whatever reason, like, the tables get turned on them. They're suddenly viewed as like, oh, the Gen Xers we have the numbers by a mile. We'll take out some big threats from within our own group. Or two, and this is something I think you were the one who speculated about a couple weeks ago, is we have been thrown off by these millennials being such big, engaging personalities, and they are the Savaius who are the more interesting characters, but in the end, it's the Upolus who are going to be the endgame players, and Chris and Brett are now emerging, and we're finally starting to see them.
So what would be your call, then, on what's going to happen to Chris, let's say?
The problem for me is I laid out these two theories and it still doesn't feel to me like either one of those is going to happen. Like, Chris still seems to me like someone who's going to go out at like final 7, final 8, final 6, somewhere in that, and probably not even last as long as final 6. But this is an episode that I think really started to open things back up for me for several players, and Chris is definitely among them. And I will at least start putting out there, as you know, Chris is someone who I had kind of written out of my potential people who was going to be there in the finale. And I'm definitely going to include him back in that group now. Like, if I were to give him finale equity, I think he has, you know, at least a solid 25-33% shot of being there now in the finale, where I previously thought that he was just going to be like mid-range, you know, mid-game. I don't want to say fodder, but just kind of unceremoniously booted because everyone kind of recognized he was a threat.
It feels to me like we could have a string of episodes where it's just Chris, Brett, Sunday going back-to-back. Like, if things turn against him somehow, if the millennials flip or whatever like that. We could get like a lull in the middle of the season where nothing's really happening.
Yeah, I definitely. That's kind of what I had in mind, I suppose. But to me, that would be inconsistent with why we are seeing Chris and Brett at this merge when we could otherwise be seeing people who are going to be there in the end or people who are just bigger personalities. Although I do want to go back. I actually think Brett is a really good narrator in these confessionals when he's finally now getting airtime.
Yeah, I like him a lot. That's not just because he's my motivational coach or whatever, but also because he is just like this low-key but very engaging personality.
Yeah, I'm with that. So I think just as you mentioned, one of the general kind of themes of this episode for us is, as we were looking ahead in last week's podcast to how this merge might potentially play out, I was at least saying it looks like it's going to be the Generation Xers plus Adam and Zeke and maybe Hannah, maybe not, against the Millennials, but it never ends up going the way that we think it's going to go. This time, Dom, it seems like it totally went. It's not like I had Michelle high up on my list of merge boot candidates, but apart from that, as far as the political breakdown, it does actually feel like it went directly where they were setting it up to clearly go the whole time, which, at least for me in the modern Survivor era, is a little bit unconventional at this point for the merge episode, at least.
And even the Michelle boot felt fairly in your face, not just because she is the only woman in that group and we know what the trend is this season, but also like that tactic of Edgardoing the other group is pretty well established by now. And especially with all of these super fans in that majority, it was no surprise at all to hear them come up with that.
Right. And just to quickly, for people new to the podcast, I guess, Edgardoing someone, of course, a callback to the original season in Fiji, where the majority was faced with the decision of which of the remaining horsemen to vote off. And they decided to put their votes on Edgardo just because he was the least likely to have the idol played on him. And that was really the only logic that I saw, at least explicitly on the show, of why Michelle ended up being the target. It really, as we'll get to later, I totally bit that Adam was potentially in jeopardy if he didn't play his hidden immunity idol. Like, I ended up falling for this. It's purely in retrospect that I'm saying that, oh, these political breakdowns were so obvious.
Yeah, the whole Adam might be the boot thing came so late that it just felt like they threw it in at the last minute to try and generate some suspense, but it was never actually going to... Like, if Adam was going to be the boot there, either they wouldn't flag it up to that degree, or they would flag it up much earlier and kind of weave stuff around it. But the way they did it felt almost like a reverse tell to me.
Well, in his opening confessional about how pumped he was for the merge, and this is, of course, something I didn't remember my first time watching it through, but Adam says... when he's one of those four people who gets to bring us into the merge is where really great players get separated from the mediocre players. And I hope that I'm in the former group. And then they spend, 20 minutes of this episode totally clowning on Adam.
Yeah, that definitely a sign that Adam is going to be humiliated in some way. But thankfully, we're going to get that drawn out over the next few episodes, it seems. So stay tuned for that.
Right away, when he got that quote, I was like, oh my God, that's a perfect winner quote if he goes on to have a good episode here. But I would say, not to jump the gun too much, he surely did not have a good episode here.
Yeah, perfect winner quote, and also the perfect, his game goes to pieces in one episode and he gets booted at the end quote.
Right. Well, let's walk this through piece by piece as we talk about Adam here. It begins at this merge feast where he channels his inner Tony Vlachos. He thinks that there's possibly some kind of merge idol out there. He wants to go and find it because he's not that hungry anyway. He instead goes to Tremail, looks up, and finds an advantage that lets him steal someone's reward. I very much like the initiative, I guess, as long as people at the merge aren't going, oh, wow, look, everyone, Adam's off looking for advantages or idols or whatever. We didn't see any of that. But the question everyone is asking, Dom, of course, about this is stealing a reward an advantage or a disadvantage? Is this anything you would ever even want to use?
I guess, like, if you knew you were getting voted out that night, you could just screw someone over for the fun of it. But in general, it's going to incinerate any goodwill you have with that person. So unless you're so desperate you have to use it for some other purpose, then, yeah, just stay far away.
I'm going to take as far as I can tell, is a very controversial take. Every single person I've heard has said this is a total disadvantage. No one would ever be stupid enough to use this. I feel like, at least for me, I would view this essentially as just an insurance policy against the wrong person winning an advantage specifically or some kind of thing at a reward challenge. Not any kind of, like, I'm not taking anyone's food or I'm not taking their loved one's visit or I would never consider taking anything like that. But I would definitely just keep it to myself, and if the disaster person wins the advantage at the wrong time, I feel like everyone, including that person, would understand if I just backed into this reward that I have found and kept to myself all along, I have no choice but to use it now. I'm sorry, like, I would be a fool not to use it. Like, to me, I think it totally depends on how Adam intends on using this advantage as to whether it is an advantage or a disadvantage. I think this is nothing but an insurance policy that he could totally keep secret and hopefully never have to use.
Or let's say someone plays an idol, that idol goes back into the game, and you think that the clue's going to be at the reward, so yeah, I don't want someone on the other team who maybe could find it and screw up my plans going there and getting it instead.
I still think that's probably not even worth it. I think your idle equity is not high enough to burn someone that hard. But I truly believe that if you are using it only to protect against like disaster outcomes and otherwise just going to keep it to yourself and hopefully never use it, that this is totally something that is there is no downside to this as long as you only use it for something like absolutely paramount or critical. Yeah. Although, do you feel like, as has been speculated, that he is potentially saving this for the loved one's visit? We've gotten the storyline set up about his mom and how important all of that is for him. And a lot of people I know have been speculating that may be something we see.
That's really interesting. Obviously not something you want to speculate about. I don't know who, like, if she would be able to come out there, who would be coming out there, if it would just be a case of wanting to hear news about what's going on or something. But yeah, that's actually a good take. It strikes me, though, that you put this reward in the game. You put this advantage in the game. You want someone to use it, right? Like you want someone to steal a reward, and then the other person gets pissed, and then that's great drama that you can edit around. But you have a lot of, and I think Adam is a perfect example, maybe, you have a lot of these fans who aren't going to be willing to take that risk. So, like, if Zeke got it, or if Hannah got it, like, or Chris, even, or Brett, like, do you think these people would be willing to actually burn someone else just so they could get some more food or whatever?
I really feel like most people, especially on a season with so many fans, would not be willing to use it in most situations. But I also feel like when they're designing the season and they're thinking, okay, there are 13 people left here at the merge, I feel like they are thinking there's at least a decent enough chance that this could stumble into the hands of someone, especially when we're leaving it in plain sight, essentially at Tree Mill, where someone could easily stumble upon it, potentially. Someone could Ralph Kaiser their way to this advantage. I think it's definitely, they're surely aware of the possibility that this is going to be viewed as a disadvantage, but I think there's a good enough chance that someone could use it.
Yeah, I guess your dream is like, Figgy, if she was still around, like she wins right. It and uses that to set up a date with Taylor or something, or like you can imagine how it could work out pretty well.
Right. Anyone who will prioritize like getting back at someone over their own position in the game. Or like if anyone who eventually realizes, hey, I've lost, like best I'm doing is losing finalists, why not make it even more compelling to take me to the finals when I'm stealing all these people's food?
Or even just, I know I need to win all the challenges to stay alive here. Why not just get some food so I feel more well rested, nourished or whatever.
Yeah, I do want to go back, though, to something that we talked about with the legacy advantage, and it seems like the exact same thing is in play, and I totally love it, which to me, it seems like production has realized that the problem with the advantages that they put in before is that they were making it public that advantages were going in, and the person who had the advantage was known by everyone else, and they didn't know what the advantage necessarily was, but they did know who the person with the big mystery box was. I think they have learned from that, and I think it's great that they are putting in these advantages that no one even knows exist. I think that is a step in completely in the right direction as far as the future of the game is concerned. And I think generally speaking, between this reward steal and the legacy advantage, I'm totally on board with them trying a couple of different things every season. These kind of lower key, lower stakes, I guess, advantages, just kind of sprinkling them in. And hey, maybe we can hit on the next hidden immunity idol. Maybe we can find something that's really going to be a game changer. All right. Good stuff. So, incidentally, before we move along, Merge tribe name is never discussed, but we do see that it is called Vanaka. Any takes on that? Good, bad, indifferent?
I'm not sure what kind of take I could possibly have about it. Like, it's just such a generic, like, vaguely foreign-sounding tribe name that,
nothing
to add.
It's another Austin Trupp tribe name for Survivor Maryland, yeah. I don't know. I thought it seems like... I guess now I do kind of know what you were saying last week about potentially feeling racist, saying they sound made up. These kind of like Kasama back in Blood versus Water, I don't know. I guess they probably do have literal translations.
Right. It's not a case of like, I think they're making this up. It's just the whole premise of the show is you're not going to know anything about the actual culture of these places or what's actually going on here. But because it's an island and it's far away and, you know, we see all these tribes people sometimes or whatever, like it's meant to feel like it's meant to feel very alien. Right. And so having some like weird sounding word is part and parcel of that.
I know we walked through the like temples in the beginning of Second Chance. They had the whole cast for that awesome kind of opening shot. But apart from things like that, when is the last time that, like, the culture has come into play on a Survivor season? We used to see, you know, a challenge every season about the local, sometimes it was, like, local weaponry challenge, or sometimes it was local trivia challenge, but it seems like the location, and I'm not necessarily even complaining about this, but it seems like that part of what was once a staple of a Survivor season is now long gone.
Yeah, and even the walk through the Cambodian temples, that was purely instrumental, just so that they could have this great shot to open the season with. It wasn't because they were actually trying to give you a sense of what Cambodia's like or anything. But yeah, now that you mention it, I don't know when the last time was. I imagine it has come up recently, but not in a memorable enough way that we could even recall it offhand.
Did they do something in Nicaragua about Nicaraguan? I don't know. I don't even know why I asked when I have absolutely no idea what the answer is, but that's typically how this podcast goes.
You get some of those rewards. So I think when, I think it was Redemption Island, where they went to that big statue or whatever, it was like a really famous local landmark or something.
Where Philip walked up on Boston Rob and Grant with the clue. Is that where you're, the reward in question?
Something like that. I didn't even know.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I don't know. It definitely does seem like, I would be honestly at this point probably surprised if we start working that back in. It seems like that they've decided that's no longer something they want to do.
Yeah, and it kind of sounds hypocritical of me to say this when I've said before, like, I wouldn't mind if this was just played in an office suite or whatever. Like, the location doesn't do that much for me. But if you're going to do this, if this is going to be the entire basis of the show, then at least put some effort into it, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I know Rob has said many times on RHAP that he would be in on the idea, as would I, of the idea of just Survivor Island, where they buy a big island and that's where they play every season of Survivor. It seems like the cultural element, like where each season is shot, is becoming a distant memory at this point.
Here's a question, and maybe the answer is obvious, but I don't think it is. Where was Survivor Australia filmed? And not as in, like, you know what I mean.
It was buried in Grant's tomb. The Australian outback, I don't know, isn't like 80% of Australia just outback?
No, like Australian Survivor.
Oh,
where
oh,
was
oh.
that filmed?
It was also filmed in Samoa.
Okay, but like they had, what, three times the amount of screen time or whatever? Like, they easily could have worked in some kind of reference to that at literally any point in the season. And yet I as far as I can recall, like, they had some rewards where they went to like a local attraction or whatever, but there's no sense of like, oh, they're very clearly in Samoa, right?
That's a good point, and I think it's kind of in line, like, it never even occurred to me, oh, why aren't they talking about where they are? Because I think I'm just used to them not talking about where they are anymore. Like, has it been brought up, apart from Jeff maybe in that opening couple of seconds saying, we're in Fiji and Survivor Millennial, like, has it ever, apart from that, been brought up that they're in Fiji?
I don't think so. It's harder now because nowadays you don't have those really immersive locations like where in China, where you had, they were literally just in this very distinct location. You had all of this Chinese iconography everywhere, or in like Guatemala, where you literally had Mayan ruins there in the middle of the campsite. Like nowadays, you just don't have that. It's always generic beach and then occasionally generic like water challenge or whatever. But you don't really get a sense of what's actually going on.
Yeah. But you know, as I've said already a couple of times, that's more than fine with me. I think, it's how I feel for whatever reason. I feel like a dick, like being dismissive about the location. I feel like I'm just taking it for granted. And that's not really what I'm trying to say. I just feel like it's not as integral as a part of a show at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't think you're taking it for granted. You're giving it as much attention as they're wanting you to give it by how they treat it in the show.
Right. Exactly. That's how I'm going to justify it at least. Okay,
sure.
Let's get into, at this merge feast, they apparently have a bunch of leftover food. Taylor is essentially a mason jar specialist, apparently. He steals a bunch of this food in the middle of the night. Not the call I think that either of us is going to be endorsing strategically. We've already touched on Brett getting that kind of randomly inserted confessional about waking up and catching him and not really wanting to do anything about it. After that, Adam ends up catching him, and I had theorized earlier in this podcast that maybe the reason that Brett thing was included was to make Adam look worse by comparison, because Adam pursues this pretty aggressively, and like at first it does seem like potentially the right idea to say, oh, Taylor is someone who I know I have definitely burned in the past. This is an opportunity to get some alone time. Maybe, especially given the context of me kind of busting him, he's going to be more inclined to be, you know, maybe not be nice to me, but be more open to what I have to say because he doesn't want me blowing up his spot later, if Taylor even cares about that kind of thing, which maybe he doesn't. But let's get into Adam and how he handled this whole situation.
Yeah, so I think it's a very good impulse to try and mend that fence. I worry, though, that throwing someone's name out there, especially someone who Taylor, kind of hypothetically at least, is aligned with and that you're aligned with too, in Will, that seems to be a step too far. And it seems like there's a lot of risk attached to that, which we saw almost play out, or we saw Taylor try to make it play out at least.
Right. I think, yeah, I'm totally with you that going for at least beginning to mend the fence is definitely something that I'm on board with in this scenario, where you want to at least get the wheels in motion to open the lines of communication with Taylor. However, the lengths that Adam goes to here in order to try to regain Taylor's trust, where he tells him, you know, basically everything he can about what's going on in the game, including the details of his new reward that was otherwise secret. I suppose he did not tell him about the hidden immunity idol, so that was certainly a good hold of information there. But other than that, it does seem like this was going way past the close as far as trying to get back on good terms with Taylor, right? This seems like, and especially when Taylor is getting a confessional, by the way, cut into here of Adam as he's listing off all these things that he shouldn't be telling Taylor, and Taylor's saying, oh my God, I can't believe this guy is telling me all of these things. And then it immediately cuts to Adam saying, oh, and by the way, I have this special reward stealer that no one else knows about, as, you know, blatantly suggesting, here's yet another thing that he should obviously not be telling Taylor about. I feel like, Dom, to get right to it, that this was the beginning of what we've already addressed as a horrible episode for Adam. I feel like almost this scene alone has him virtually drawing dead for me this season. Like, this would be getting clowned on harder than any eventual winner I can recall has ever gotten clowned on in the season that they won.
Yeah, so we were talking about this a bit off air. We were trying to think of when has a winner ever been made to look this bad so explicitly? Because there have been times where like a winner's been left out of a vote or they've done something which turns out to be a mistake. But when the edit is so explicitly just piling on them like this, it's I can we couldn't think of any examples. Maybe more are coming to mind now that we're talking about it. But
I have one, the one example I can think of. And this is why we are such massive fans of this season. I know it's my number one season is in Kageyan. When Tony did the llama thing at Cass, I remember coming in and to the podcast saying, Tony is now drawing dead. They would never show that from the winner. They would never show the winner behaving like that.
See, I think that's different because that's Tony being either being a dick or being Tony, depending on how you want to look at it. But also, like, that's just an argument that he gets into with another contestant. It's not like a bad gameplay move. I think that's the key here, because now that the show is all about the game and that's really what they focus on, and even these winners who it seems like don't have a part to play in how the season really goes down are made to look like they're masterminds, you know, who are in control of everything. I think that's a crucial thing here, where you can survive being made to look like a bit unlikable or maybe making a mistake or whatever. If you're shown to be actively messing up in the game, then that's a really bad sign.
Right. And furthermore, later on when Hannah and Zeke are trying to pull together, you know, decide how essentially what they're going to be doing along with this Gen X alliance and what, you know, whether to include Adam or to what extent to include Adam, they leave in a lot of like smear stuff towards Adam, where Hannah says he's the worst teammate ever. And Zeke says, yes, Adam is not trustworthy. He's a bad alliance member. He's frustrating to work with. This is not getting left in. If Adam is your winner, this is not how they right. paint someone.
Yeah. And my guess, and maybe this is just the Adam fanboy in me wishing that it was so, but my guess is like Adam overplays his hand a bit, is a bit too paranoid. They have this very short conversation like, oh, Adam's been really annoying today, isn't he? Oh, yeah, he is. And then that's it, right? And I don't think there are ever any real designs on their part to get him voted out or to, like, shuffle him around in the alliance. It's just that's what the Game of Survivor does to people. But instead, they make it out to be this massive thing. And maybe it will be. Like, maybe, who knows, in two episodes' time, maybe they try to put a hit on Adam, or maybe they try to put a hit, but it doesn't work, and now the rest of that storyline is him trying to fight back against his former allies somehow. But to me, this just feels so like contrived that there must be something else going on.
Well, that's the thing for me, is it does to me feel like there must be something else going on too, because I had previously been slotting Adam in as the you know, the Spencer, the Malcolm, Golden Boy, who just comes up just short. But to me, it felt like over both of Spencer and Malcolm's two seasons each, they were constantly, when they were the long-term kind of Golden Boy character, they never got content half the year, or even close to this bad. They were still kind of whitewashed, and essentially all of their blemishes were erased for at least the first, you know, 12 episodes of all of their seasons. Whereas Adam, it, you know, for someone who I, as mentioned, really thought was going to be filling that role, this would really be unprecedented for me, to the point that I'm now wondering if potentially Adam could be the one, and it's not Chris or Brett, but maybe Adam is the one where the Gen Xers say, okay, we have the numbers by a mile, this kid's sketching all of us out, let's just do something about it now. Well, he's not going to be ready for it. And actually, just one more thing about that. I feel like Adam, even after what is certainly being presented to us as a disastrous merge round, I would still feel like if we were out there on the island watching this and being able to bet in real time, I would imagine Adam still has at least some winner equity as they're still out there playing this. I wish that in the timelines where he was to recover from kind of this punt of a merge into, and obviously it ended up going his way. He kept his idol. The vote went his way, but not the greatest social merge. If he were to turn this around and win, I feel like, as we've been talking about, they would never show him playing this poorly at the merge itself in those timelines. I really wish they would. I really wish they would be honest, because this, to me, was one of the most captivating, like, character episodes we've seen from anyone in a really long time. Of just the story of Adam scrambling around at this merge was really compelling. And I feel like in the timeline where he went on to go, you know, if he were to go on to win, it would be awesome to see it from that perspective and see him come back from that.
I don't know if you're being just unusually hyperbolic, which it would be very unlike you, but to me it was just, I wish I could see the episode in the same terms that you do, because then it would have been so much more exciting. But for me it was just, especially compared to how good most merge episodes are, it was just pretty underwhelming.
Well, I think it was definitely underwhelming as far as the number of timelines, as far as what could go down, but I really thought it was interesting. On the heel, not just by itself in a vacuum as a merge episode, but in the context of Adam has been really built up as one of the heroes of this season to this point, and to have it take like a total 180 over the course of this episode, and the whole time I was watching it, I really thought it was possible that this was going to end with him leaving. So I was really, really focused on Adam the whole time. So that's probably why that's why I'm building him up specifically so much. But I really thought that they did a real deep dive on it. I mean, do you disagree? I felt like he was, I don't know what the confessional counts were or anything, but it seems like he was surely the focal point of like at least a third of the scenes or so.
So I'm not trying to slander Adam's good name in this comparison, but it reminds me of Troyzan in One World, where like the merge episode was so completely devoted to him because he ended up just being the one like point of opposition to Kim in a season where no one else was really doing anything. And I think there are more characters here who could step into the limelight, but this is just the role that Adam had to play this week, and so that's what he did. Now, I don't feel like it was especially good or especially... I don't know, it just didn't feel that captivating to me. What I will ask you, though, just to close on this topic, is you said you thought Adam could be in danger. Do you still think that going forward, or is this just a way to build up tension for this episode, and that's going to pretty much die down now?
I definitely think that going forward. Like I said, I feel like with the people like Spencer or Malcolm, which is kind of the archetype I thought he was going to fall into, they really never seem to smear them, at least not this early into a season, and never nearly to this extent, the same way that it feels like Adam got treated this episode. So yeah, I definitely feel like I am now far less, I'm off the idea of him being a possible winner. I am way down on the idea of him being like the season finale, but who comes up just short, Golden Boy. I feel like it could definitely get turned on him as soon as next week.
Yeah, the preview for Wednesday is Taylor trying to turn things around on Adam because of his advantage. First of all, never trust the previews. Secondly, I don't know if this advantage really means that much. Like, if you're hearing about this, are you really going to turn on your alliance and vote out Adam and risk all the things that comes with just because he might have some advantage that doesn't even seem that important?
That's what I was also, I meant to ask, I would, certainly a part of me would be wondering if Adam was just making this advantage up and trying to like see if I would spill it so that when it got leaked, he would know that I'm not trustworthy or whatever.
Oh, well, okay, that's next level. I was thinking just he was making it up because the advantage is stronger and he doesn't want to tell us what it actually is.
Oh, okay, that's interesting too. But it does seem like, if he's trying to bring me in as an ally, I mean, maybe not. Maybe he would be dishonest, but it does seem like a pretty ballsy move. Like, I don't think Steven, when he had his advantage, I think before he told people what it was, he was just saying, I'm not going to say what it is one way or the other. He wouldn't lie about it and say it did something else. Although, I mean, we've certainly seen like Tony do that. It's not unprecedented, but it certainly seems a little like maybe aggressive is the wrong word, but it seems a little bad for Adam, even on the heels of this episode, to be doing something like that. All right. Let's get into, I think, the immunity challenge. This is a variation on a classic where we're going to be holding our arms up until we can't anymore. The last person left is going to win immunity. Over an hour into this challenge, it comes down to Will and Jessica. Will, while all of his friends are off in like science class or whatever, Will wins this individual immunity. 18-year-old Will, youngest survivor ever, is our first merge immunity holder. Is that exciting for you, Dom? I know you're a big fan of the emotional highs of Survivor.
I was overcome by tears, honestly. Yeah. See, if I was an editor and my running joke for the season had been, I wonder how little screen time we can give Will, and now he forces us to show him by actually winning a challenge. That's some pretty good, like, fourth wall breaking subversion of the, like, meta game going on right there. But I don't know, like, I wonder if Will, because it's weird to us, because we see Will pop up for, like, 5 minutes and then vanish again after 7 weeks where he just hasn't done anything, and we think, okay, Will's not going to be a big player this season. Out there, though, you don't know that, right? You see Will, and he's in these strategic conversations, and he's a vote that you need to count in your tally, and he actually does seem like a relevant thing. So that disconnect, especially for some of them watching it back now, has to seem very strange.
Yeah, I feel like if Will was 21 instead of 18, and like we always talk about, like if we were out there watching the game play out in real time, able to bet after this round, I feel like Will would definitely be someone I would have my eye on as well. It's like the least threatening person who's probably going to be the odd man left over if that Millennials Alliance potentially gets picked off. And then from there, I think he could definitely do some damage if he were not viewed as a child.
But why put him on the show at all entirely based on his age if you're just going to pretend he doesn't exist?
I mean, that's my point. That's what I've said the entire time about Will, is why are we putting an 18-year-old on the show merely to put an 18-year-old on the show and then ignore them? Like, that seems crazy to me.
Sure. Well, I think the idea of put an 18-year-old out there and show how that's interesting is a pretty good idea, because I think it is interesting. But what they're doing is just he may as well be Sunday or someone else who just isn't there on the season anymore.
Well, I don't think it's quite to Purple Sunday extent, but I definitely feel like it's weird just given how when we do get to see stuff from Will, I do find him to be like an interesting speaker. I definitely don't think he's like boring
or
whatever.
Is that because of his voice or what he's actually saying?
Maybe, because I do honestly spend a bit of every single one of his confessionals like, wow, I can't believe that's his speaking voice. But I don't know. I feel like Will is at least... I certainly wouldn't say Will is boring, and I wouldn't say Will is totally invisible. It just seems like they're doing nothing to get into the only reason they put him out there.
Yeah, that's my approach to podcasting, basically. Just ramble on and hope that the voice makes up the ground. And I'm also basically 18 years old, so the parallels are obvious.
So far, so good. Yeah. I guess while we're on Will, just because I don't know when he's going to come back up, what do you think his long-term story is going to be here?
I don't think he has one at this stage.
So you think he's leaving soon is what you mean? Or you think he's just going to be invisible the whole time?
He's going to be invisible the whole time.
When do you think he's going to leave?
Well, I don't know. He might have some like Natalie Bolton-esque breakout towards the end, but even that, who knows?
I feel like Will has Eric Reichenbach upside, to use another Fans versus Favorites. Like, he could find himself just kind of deep in there, win a couple challenges, and be likable. I think that's at least would be potentially in play for me. As things stand, I feel like Will... it's probably going to be one of, probably at best, like the middle jurors. I don't think Will's going to be someone that most people are going to want in there too late. But I do want to say, I'm sure it was cool for Will, as, you know, as a high schooler to be 18 years old and win a Survivor individual immunity. That's got to be an amazing feeling. So good for, I don't want to be like super negative about Will. I don't want to be that guy, I guess. Although I normally am, I suppose.
Well, see, if you're negative about everything now, when he puts like a truly good achievement out there, you can be even more positive about it, and it'll count for more.
Yeah, that's right. That's the general philosophy of this podcast, right? If you're mean about 95% of things, then the 5% of things you are nice about, they ring really true.
But yeah, all credit to Will. It has to be just like surreal, even being out there at his age. It sounds patronizing. I know we said the same thing about Julia a few seasons ago, but like, if you put me out there when I was 18 or 19, I would just completely fallen apart. I would still fall apart now, but to an even more unparalleled degree. Like, it was just, Yeah, I think it takes like a lot of poise and self-confidence to just even accept the invitation, knowing what it can do to you.
I mean, I'm so glad that Twitter didn't exist when I was 18. I can't even imagine what it would have been like if I was on national TV when I was 18. So I definitely commend Will overall. I did. Okay. People get it. All right. Let's move it along, Tom. So actually one thing that I thought was interesting just on rewatch here is after the challenge, Will gets immunity, and now Will, having heard that his name was coming from Adam, wants to turn the tables on Adam. Michelle comments about this plan from the millennials. She says, quote, "It seems like more of a personal move than a strategic move, and I'm worried we're making a huge mistake." We now obviously know that Michelle ended up being the merge boot here and kind of suffering by the hands of this group not really having it together. Do you feel like this quote, as I do, I think, is almost damning this entire group to failure? Like, I feel like once they include these kind of things so that when you rewatch it, it stands out as like, aha, oh, that makes so much sense now. I feel like that could potentially be exactly what this is from Michelle.
Right. And if you spend just a second thinking about it, what is she meant to do instead? What is that entire group meant to do instead? If they had voted for, I don't know, Brett or Zeke or Sunday, like, does the outcome change? No. Right. But it's, they want to set it up as a mistake so that when their eventual downfall comes, it seems somewhat justified.
Well, what do you think the moral of this merge was? In the story of the generations, millennials versus Gen X, finally coming together, what do you think they're trying to tell us about, like, what a successful approach to that was?
I don't know. An alliance of eight is better than an alliance of four? you're telling me.
Well, especially when there are 13 people and then they're... You got one left over, and they're just off on an island. They're off on Exile Island.
Well, superfans can't do basic math, and
right,
you know, luckily we have quite a few non-superfans there to set the record straight. But I think, like, I don't know what Michelle's role is meant to be, because we saw her put off some, like, dazzling wizardry almost in flipping Hannah at Tribal Council a few weeks ago. Then she just dropped off the map, and then she resurfaced briefly to let us know how bad a position she was in and how everyone else didn't regard her that highly, and now she just gets voted out. So what are we meant to see of Michelle just as a player?
I really don't know. I feel like this was another episode, along with the episode last week where Michaela got booted, where it was really crafted to be maximum, like, shock value when that was the person who ended up leaving. Like, oh my god, I totally didn't see that coming. And both times, I think it's kind of come at the expense of the person who ended up leaving. And Michelle, it seems like, was... obviously a big, big player the first time when the original Millennials tribe went to Tribal Council and voted out Mare. She was a standout there. I know she was on a lot of people's radars, but she really just dropped off from there. And even in this big merge episode where she ends up being the boot, we still didn't even see that much from her. It seemed like she was, to me at least, a total victim of circumstance. It seems like Michelle, as far as I could tell, had plenty of chops for Survivor in general. It's like you said, what are you going to do? Like, this is the group she's with.
You remember when Mari was a contestant on the season and everyone loved her and thought she would win, and then she got voted out second and everyone lost their shit?
I sure don't.
Fun times. Anyway, so yeah, Michelle gets voted out, and it's, as merge boots go, like, we can talk about that kind of leveling game that they have to play, where, like, you think Jay has an idol, so you don't want to vote for Jay, but then you think, well, could Jay maybe give his idol up to someone? And if so, who would that be? And then usually, like, the level one step is we give it to the person who we think they're least likely to give it to or to have it, which is usually like a quieter female player, right? So in this case, I think they're forcing Michelle into that role.
Right.
In reality,
the Aussie play is to give it to Whitney, if you want to use the level.
Yeah.
Right.
But do you think that actually applies anymore? So in Jay's case specifically, is he more likely to give it to Taylor or to Michelle? Or to Will, even, if he didn't have immunity?
I think we are at the point now in Survivor where the votes have gone so many different ways and the idol has been played on so many different people in so many different positions within the minority alliance that unless you have a good reason to believe that your read would be right for, you know, one way or the other for whatever reason that may be, I think it is essentially just a coin flip. I really don't think there is, like, conventional wisdom when it comes to, okay, if you don't have any information, the best move is to put it on the X most physical threat or the X biggest strategic threat or whatever. I don't think there is anything, any kind of, like, science to that. I really think it's, as we always go back to, it's just a leveling war of who's going to end up on rock and who's going to end up on paper or scissors, and that's going to decide who wins and loses. Yeah. So one, I guess, we talked about it a little bit, but any other thoughts on Adam's consideration and playing the idol versus not playing the idol, because I am definitely of the mindset, if I were out there playing in Adam's spot, if I thought there was a decent enough chance that a lot of votes were coming on me, I would play this without too much hesitation. And then from that point forward, I am no longer the guy who could realistically have an idol, I think, in a lot of people's minds. And I am ensuring my safety, ensuring the merge vote probably goes my way. I feel like because he didn't play it, he must have felt like he was totally safe. But were there any other considerations, you think, that could have gone into this?
I think I feel pretty much what I always feel, which is if you have to play it, you're probably drawing dead regardless, so you may as well save it for a spot when you might need it. But as always, like, if you think it's going to be you, that's going to be nowhere near the front of your mind.
Well, I also, I think, disagree with that kind of philosophy now. Like, I do think that definitely was the case where back in the day where alliances were so much more set in stone, like even during the early seasons that we were podcasting about, like we were talking about South Pacific and One World, and both of those were seasons where people just rode with their solid three all the way from day one through day 39. I think there was a time where that was kind of the general mentality, but I think in much more fluid game dynamics that we get in the post-Second Chances era, or I guess the post-Vlachos era, I guess I'll call it, I feel like if you have to idle yourself at the merge boot, or at the merge, excuse me, or right around there, you were by no means drawing close to it. Like, look at Kelly Wentworth in Second Chances. She was one away from the merge where she had to use her idol, and then she was right in there with a solid shot.
Yeah, and if you look at the past 3 years, let's say, of seasons, I think they've only had Worlds Apart, and even that, there was some complexity to it, where it was just, there's a big alliance, they stay together pretty much for as long as they can, and then they turn on each other. Other than that, it's always been, there are some twists and turns along the way, and you can't count yourself out if one vote goes against you.
All right, any other takes that you want to give on this episode before we start kind of looking ahead to what may be coming down the line?
It was fine. Could have been better. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it wasn't like it. Obviously, wasn't one of the biggest merge episodes we've ever seen. But I do really feel like the story that they told of Adam kind of scrambling his way around, I thought was really, really cool. And I'm really, really curious to see where it goes. So let's get into where it goes. I know I've flagged up. I think it's at least possible that someone from that big group could be the one who leaves next week. Although I would say it's overwhelmingly likely, I think, that one of Taylor, Jay, or Will is going to be on their way out. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with that. What I want to move on to, though, is, so, and I think this kind of sums up the episode pretty well. We've only talked about a few people, really. We've spoken about Adam, like Jay to some extent, and a few others. I don't think we've had a single word yet about David, who is starting to look like an actual, like a legit player in the season, and maybe even a legit winner candidate as well. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think this is probably, for the people who are, like, averse to diving deep into what the edit may be telling us, I think now would probably be the time to tune out, because I think this is a really interesting conversation this week, and I think it's probably going to start now. But yeah, David is actually someone who I had ruled out. I know we've talked about him as, like, a lock to be in the finale, but probably not the winner, and to the point that I'd had him, like, drawing dead to be the winner. I feel like David is actually one of probably only three people at this point for me who is even drawing live now, and I'm giving him a single-digit percentage here. But, yeah, I feel like we are at this point after – I'm now ruling Adam out, unfortunately. I feel like we are quickly running out of winner equity going anywhere but to Ken, and plenty on Ken shortly, I promise. Another person that we basically haven't talked about yet this week. I feel like Zeke and David are the only other ones that I could see realistically winning, and while I did previously have David drawing dead when I thought there were a lot of other compelling options, now that I'm only down to otherwise Ken and Zeke, I'm going to put David in there with some equity. Like, I do definitely feel like if this is eventually David winning, stranger things have happened. We've had stranger winner edits than David.
And we go back to, like, if David were to win, knowing how he started out, knowing that he was this just paranoid mess in the beginning, you can't not show that. And I think you would want to show that anyway. So, like, maybe, so as weird as it seems, like, that's just what you would have to do.
Yeah. The other person that I mentioned along with Ken is Zeke, who I think, I don't feel like, based at least on what we've seen from the TV show to this point, I feel like it is clear to me that Zeke is the best player on the island out there at this point. It seems like Zeke is the one with the best relationships with people, and I think that's what matters most in this kind of, at this point in the game.
See, if you put it in those terms, I don't think that Zeke is playing badly by any means, but he doesn't leap off the screen as some kind of great player or anything.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. Yet, I feel like because he's so good and we're not seeing him get, like, a coronation, it's probably not because it means he probably doesn't win.
Well, so that goes one of two ways, right? Like, it's either he's playing such a good game that it's hidden even from us and from everyone out there, or he's just playing a solid but fairly unremarkable game, and there's nothing really to comment on. And yet, like, if you ask me what's the general standard to play this season, I'd want to say it's a little bit higher than that. So I don't know if I would have someone above Zeke, but then I don't know who that would be. So, yeah, I'm kind of confused.
Well, what I mean is, I feel like because Zeke, to me, is playing really, really well and is giving great confessionals, I feel like if he were to go on to win, especially in a season where they know that a lot of the viewing audience was disappointed in the Aubrey-type losing, I feel like Zeke winning would please a lot of that same demographic, and they would really want to build him up. I feel like that we would be seeing just more of Zeke, especially in a critical episode like the Merge. That being said, he's still my clear number two at this point. I feel like Zeke is in there with at least a decent enough chance compared to virtually everyone else, but I think... let's get into it, Dom. I know he has been invisible these last 2 weeks. Nonetheless, I feel like just by default, he has now actually gone up for me in winner equity. What's up with Ken? Where has he been, and where does he stand for you right now?
You tell me. I have no idea what's going on with Ken. And this is starting to freak me out, honestly, because I kind of like with Trump, I bought into everything that you were saying about, oh, well, there's a very clear outcome here. There's no way it could possibly be any different. And now that the evidence again is starting to mount up. So I'm not saying that Ken is like out of the mix or anything by any means. I think he's still by far at the top, but there's a part of me that's starting to worry a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, as far as like, let me put it out there that first of all, the preferred outcome for me by a mile is Ken gets voted out and is not or Ken loses in the finals. Ken is not the winner, is easily my preferred outcome. I do not want another Michelle kind of scenario going on. I've tried to be much lower key, tried and often failed to be much lower key about it, but I'm at least reserving now. I feel like something weird is obviously going on with Ken's edit if he is the eventual winner, just for him to be invisible these two episodes. That being said, if for people who listened to our previous podcast, we talked last week. I said, if Ken, even after this week being invisible, goes and has an invisible merge, that will not necessarily even knock him down too many points for me. And that I said that without even seeing Adam just fall off of a cliff. And we talked, that was when we were talking about Natalie Anderson's merge there. I feel like Ken, who was so, so prominent early on and set up to be such a hero early on, I feel like this is, especially given how kind of straightforward and how easily they've been able to tell the story using other people, the actual things have been playing out. This is the point where I think they would kind of want to downplay Ken potentially when he's going to get, I would imagine, a pretty overwhelming mid-game and end-game edit. That would still be definitely where my head is at. I would honestly say, again, this is mostly by process of elimination, and I certainly hope I'm wrong. I would say I would probably put Ken at like 80% right now, and Zeke and David combining for the other 20%, probably 10 and 10, right? Somewhere right around there. How does that sound to you? Does that sound crazy to you?
Everything you say sounds crazy to me, Colin. But that in particular seems fairly reasonable. Yeah, this might be one of those things where it's like Ken's edit doesn't turn out to be all that great, but everyone else just gets knocked off one by one, and so Ken is the only one left standing at the end.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like we lost these last few weeks. I've had Adam at like 30% winner equity, and that's just fallen off the board. And I just can't give too much of that to Zeke and David when, by comparison, I feel like Ken's edit has just been so much stronger.
Right. It might be like the Luigi Mario Party thing where it's just like he's just standing there. He's not doing anything, but he doesn't have to do anything because everyone else is just collapsing by themselves.
That's right. That's exactly right. Your world famous tweet that everyone knows you for and asks when you're okay, whatever.
that'll be just that. By the time I die, I hope that technology will advance to the point where GIFs can be placed on tombstones, and that's
right.
Going to be it. That is my life in one tweet.
Your epitaph in GIF form. It's pronounced GIF, by the way, and people will know that in the year that you die, which will hopefully be not too soon, but not too far. We don't want it to. Listen, I don't want a 110-year-old Dom yelling at all the kids to get off his lawn. No one wants that. So I don't know. I guess I do want to kind of just go back to the idea of why so much Brett here. Is it at least possible that Brett is getting set up for something bigger? Or Gen X Jessica, I think, certainly had a big premiere. The issue, at least for them, is I feel like there was such a long stretch where we just heard nothing. And specifically with Jess, when she has that legacy advantage, to continue to not hear anything and not really see that Figgy boot a ton from her perspective, I feel like that just has to rule her out for me. But is there any hope for, or maybe Jay or Chris, but low-energy Chris for you?
I want to say Jay is still in there. I Jay is going to be important. Maybe it's because he wins. Maybe it's because he fucks up horrendously and gets booted with the idol in his pocket. Either way, there's going to be something about Jay, and I don't think you can count him out just yet.
Okay. So you're giving Jay, are you in your 1% club? Are you still fighting the good fight with Josh Wiggler, and you say you have him in there as a winner?
He's a bit higher. I think Jay's a solid, like, 5%.
Okay, a solid 5%. That's, okay. All right. Well, Dom, I don't know. Do we have anything else that we even want to be getting to this week?
I don't know. Let's just sink back into our misery and hope that everything ends soon enough.
Yeah, this was a solid hour or so where I at least, for the first time in a couple of days, was able to keep my mind off of, oh my God, I can't believe this is the world that I live in. So thank you, Don, for this temporary kind of escape from reality.
I can always give you reminders of the impending apocalypse anytime you want, so just hit me up.
Okay, well, at least England's not too far away from Maine. That at least we'll hopefully go down together. I think that's going to do it. You can email us, by the way. It'll be too late at this point to email us your election podcast questions, but email us any future Survivor questions, domandcolin@gmail.com. Dom is on Twitter @DomHRV. I am @ColinStone. Until then, I think that's going to do it. Take care, everybody.